Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7- and 8-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, joined by, one of my favorite people, longtime ECF member, incredibly charismatic, fun, energetic entrepreneur, and that is Ronnie Teja, who is the founder of a company called Brandzio, sold watches. He's currently investing a lot of time in trulyoffice.com, which is a replacement for Microsoft Word and Excel on a single purchase license, and just a really interesting guy. And I loved our conversation today because Ronnie got real about a lot of different things, a lot of struggles in business, things that have not gone as well as he would hope. He talked about how the company that he built for over a decade, he had to let go in a way that wasn't ideal. He talked about how this year has been challenging on the CPA front, on the revenue front, had to cut staff by about 75%, having to work and struggle with some Google penalties that came up. And we talk about, he gets real candid about that and talks about mindset, how he was able to work through some of those things. And also talks about how he's getting very ambitious and going after a slice of a $32 billion market, which is pretty cool, swinging big for the fences. So really appreciated his candor and just his experience and his levity. And we're going to kick off the discussion starting with what I think probably helped get him through a lot of it too, and has just been a big positive impact in his life, which has been his health journey over the last 4 years or so, which we'll get into right after this. Today's episode is brought to you by the E-Commerce Fuel Private Community, the most vibrant and active discussion forum for owners of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce businesses. So how is it any different from other communities online or DTC Twitter? Three big reasons. First, it's vetted. Everyone inside owns a 7- or 8-figure business. Average member does about $5 million top line per year. About 15% are doing it with 8 figures. You get advice from owners who have actually been there in the trenches and that you know you can trust it because we vetted them and they're actually doing what they say they are. Secondly, no pitching. There's no affiliate links, no vendors hawking stuff at you. This is just real operators sharing what's working. And then finally, reciprocity is one of our biggest values when we moderate. We require that everyone shares something when they come in so you learn from them, but also we don't let people just come in and strip mine the community for information so you get a really healthy dynamic group. So confident this will be a game changer for your business that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. Join the community, stay for a year, and if you don't see 10x the value relative to your membership fees, we'll refund all of them plus give you $1,000 just for the hassle. So if it sounds interesting, check us out. We'd love to have you apply, and you can learn more at ecommercefuel.com. Did you know that e-commerce stores are losing 10 to 15% of their revenue by not offering upsells? It's true, but you can get that money back instantly with the OneClick Upsell app. OneClick Upsell is already the number one upsell app for over 18,000 Shopify stores, including Tushy, Dr. Squash, Buffy, and Victoria Beckham. And it's made hardworking entrepreneurs like you $670 million in extra upsell revenue. All it takes is a few clicks and you can add pre-purchase, post-purchase upsells, and cross-sells to every product on your store. In fact, the average user boosts their total sales by 10 to 15% as soon as they set it up. It's super easy to get started. Install the app, launch your first upsell funnel, and start making 10 to 15% more sales in less than 10 minutes. So if you like free money, go to oneclickupsell.com after the episode to start your free 30-day trial. I was doing a little stalking of you before our episode and saw that you had a little video with like 5 conferences to go to and you gave ECF a shout out. So thanks, man. Appreciate that.
I always do, man. You know how much I love this community. You know, I love e-commerce fuel more than anything else. And you know that.
Man, well, still appreciate it. And thank you. And looking forward to seeing you this fall when we're in Arizona. But yeah, man, I always love, getting you back on the podcast. You have such good energy. And that sounds very woo-woo-y, but you're always fun to be around. You're an upbeat guy. You're smart. You're interesting. So I always love when we get to hang out. So glad you're willing to do this again.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And I was wondering, you've had a lot of stuff go on. I was wondering, and I don't know if you talk about this much, and if you don't, totally fine. We can, we don't have to go here, but like your kind of entire health and fitness journey, I think is so interesting because I've seen little bits and pieces of it just over like the years I've gotten to know you. Is that something you talk about openly?
Yeah,
very much?
Yeah, I'm happy to.
Happy to? Yeah, I'm happy to talk about
my alcoholism. I'm happy to talk about everything, man. It's like it's an open secret that everybody knew, but it's just like I didn't talk about it.
Yeah, well, I didn't know the alcoholism part. I more just knew that kind of like I remember the first time that we were at Ecom Camp. I remember you were like religious of like going and doing your workouts in the morning.
I still am, man.
Yeah, I believe it. Anyway, I would just be curious to hear, to whatever extent you're comfortable sharing, like what kind of happened in your life, like how fitness has played a role and kind of what has changed for the better, and also maybe some of the challenges too in that whole journey. Because I think it's interesting and intriguing, and I know very little about it.
Yeah, be happy to.
Yeah. So where did it start for you?
Let's take a step back. I don't know, till 2021, I didn't know what it meant to be thin. Right. I've always been a fat kid. Like, so for me, it was like, okay, what does it mean to be thin? Like, so for example, Andrew's thin, or some people are thin when they're younger, and some people are like, you know, they put on weight as they get older. For me, it was like, I never knew for myself what it meant to be thin in the first place. Second of all, I think maintaining your body and maintaining like your weight, be it your weight, be it whatever, or this, the going to the gym at like 5 or 6 in the morning, whatever that schedule is by far the most disciplined approach you can ever have in your life, right? Once that fitness thing for me cracked, everything in my life started falling in place. But even before that was the fact that I stopped drinking. Once drinking went away, everything started falling into place. Like I guess I substituted one addiction for another. I mean, during COVID, I was up to 110 kilos, which is roughly about 240 pounds. Today, I weigh about 63 kilos.
And what was it, either on the fitness side or the drinking side? What made you decide to stop drinking? Is it safe to say you stopped drinking and then you started kind of exercising and kind of being a little more intentional about diet and things? And that was the order of things that happened?
Yeah. It was more like, I need help. I saw somebody who basically said, look, you've come at the right place. It's not that bad. You're just entering into a phase where you think, you know, it's kind of like you were bored, your routine got taken away, and you started drinking in order to substitute the routine. And he says, you need to get back on some sort of a fitness routine. So it was kind of like, okay, well, 30 day, 60 day, 90 day, 120 day. And then we basically followed it up with exercise. And then basically exercise became, let's say, the cornerstone, like the pillars of sanity, right? So for me, I when I look back at why I drank, it was basically stress. It was a stress reliever, stress buster, which is what most people take it as. For me, it was kind of like taking that away and putting pillars in place so that, you know, it's like a Jenga tower. And the Jenga tower, you know, at the bottom, there's exercise, there's discipline, there's eating healthy, there's all this stuff. And once the foundations are solid, you can build on top of it to make something like a lot better.
Yeah. I heard someone say something very similar recently that like, if you're trying to change a bad habit or a habit you don't want in your life, and you just like try to take it away without putting anything in its place, you're almost doomed to fail, because you've got to like take it away and replace it with something, right? If you're like, hey, just stop drinking and, you know, you're going to be more stressed out and that's your new life, it's like, oh, great. That's an awesome sales pitch. Sign me up for that, right?
Yeah.
You need to have something that you can replace it with, which I thought was wise. For you, what was it hard? How did you stick with the fitness routine? Because like, I just know that from personal experience and talking to others too, like building the habit's the hardest part. Like once you're in it, it's so much harder to get into shape than to stay into shape. So how are you able to, you know, how did you get through that rough early phase, which I think it's rough for everybody?
Well, the thing is like, we both knew each other for a while, right? It's one of those things where it's kind of, for me, I think it was quite important in terms of, you know, there's no such thing as half-assed. I'm a person of extremes. So like sort of giving up, well, there was an instant reward. There was an immediate reward for me when I started. So I started in Muay Thai, which is basically, you didn't even go to running. You didn't go to cycling. You basically chose the most difficult way to lose weight, which was, you know, a martial art. And basically my trainer who was there, he was like, it was during COVID, right? So like, I think it was May the 14th. So May is just like this weird date that just happens in my life, which is considered to be 14th, especially that's extremely lucky. But we ended up going, and for the first 7 days, he just ran me ragged. So I saw like a 5 kilo drop. It was probably water weight from not drinking and all this kind of stuff. But when I went to the weighing scale every morning and I saw, you know, from a Monday to a Friday, I've lost about 5 kilos of water weight. You're like, this is awesome. You know, you've lost 5 kilos. So then it's like, well, can I push myself to lose five more? And once, you know, you get to about, I guess when I came to Ecom Camp in Palm Springs, I was about 77, 75, 77 in that range. So, you know, then it was easy, right? The only thing is you don't want to go back to the person that you were. So for me, the person that I was in terms of somebody who, you know, lots of people, you know, have said you were very fun when you used to drink. But I know that it was fun. I was fun for the people, but not myself, right? So it's kind of like, you know, you don't want to go back to that person. So it was easy.
Well, the thing is, too, I mean, you don't need alcohol. I mean, if anyone's ever been in the room with you, you like come into the room and it's just like, there's just, like I said earlier, there's like an electricity, an energy with you. You're upbeat. You're like very engaged and friendly. And I am like, you don't need alcohol to be an engaging, interesting person with a presence to talk to. Some people need that, but you definitely don't.
Yes. Yeah. My nickname is the quiet one.
It's a great nickname. I love it. Oh man. Well, what about, I mean, you said that once you started kind of, you know, dropping some of that excess weight, you stopped drinking, you were feeling healthier. You said it completely kind of unlocked all these other areas of your life. Can you give a little bit of a sense into that? Like, what was it maybe on the business side that changed, and also maybe just in the general well-being side from a physiological, you know, standpoint that changed, you know, pre and post?
Yeah. So this May is basically like 4 years since I gave up, right? So I could take you through that sort of, it's a bit of a weird curve, because people talk about sort of like, oh, you have withdrawals, you have all this stuff. I didn't have any of that. It was basically like, you know, you jump into it and you go, you know, 100%. So the biggest change I found myself was becoming more consistent, right? So 7 days a week, no matter where I am, no matter where I'm traveling, I'm in the gym every morning. And my day does not start without going to the gym, right? It's like, it's a coffee, a protein shake, and a gym. Anywhere in the world. You can put me in any place in the world. Like, even if I travel to Arizona, if I travel to Palm Springs, if I travel to, you know, Europe, but that's how my day necessarily needs to start. The second thing that I learned, so with that came consistency, right? With what? There's more money in my bank. Wow. What's the downside of this?
It's interesting seeing I don't know about in Asia or in Thailand, but in the US at least, like drinking culture and kind of the shifts around drinking and alcohol have been really interesting to see. I think there's been like people are just drinking, especially younger generations are drinking a lot less. And for me, like I still drink occasionally, but I've tried to reduce my consumption of alcohol to maybe one or two drinks per week at most. Because sometimes it is really, you know, it's nice to have a beer in the setting, or depending on the environment, it could be additive. But a lot of times I would find I'd come back, you know, get off of work, come back home, and I just want something cold. And so I just, you know, casually grab a beer on the fridge and then grab a beer out of the fridge and sit down and realize that, oh man, like I'm just not even thinking about it, drinking, you know, 7, 8, 9 drinks per week, just very casually. Anyway, so for me, like kombucha, it's kind of a hippie drink, but that's a good go-to drink. There's actually some really good non-alcoholic beers I enjoy, like Go Brewing is one. Do you have a go-to drink that you've replaced alcohol or drinking with? Like, what's your go-to non-alcoholic drink?
Soda water.
Soda water?
but not like any of this, like, so Thai soda water is a thing. So if people don't know this, like, so Thai soda water, it's basically, it's like, it's not like San Pellegrino, because San Pellegrino is like little bubbly. It just tickles your tongue a little bit, right? This is like full on, full gas, you know, like just you when you talk about like a cold beer at the end of the day and you're like, it's nice and cold. That's what Thai soda water is. The Red Singh soda water. It's just mind blowing. It's my go-to drink here.
Awesome. Okay. Next time I'm in Thailand, I'll have to have some. Well, thanks for sharing, man. And congrats on, doing something really impressive. Like just, you know, doing a complete 180 on your health. And yeah, it's super cool to see and super inspiring. So well done and congrats. It's awesome to see.
I really appreciate it. I mean, for people who think they can't do it, I'm 100% sure everybody can do it. It's just like everybody, I think, has demons that they at sometimes fight, or if they're confronted by it. But I think people are too scared to reach out for help. I mean, I got lucky that I found somebody I could reach out to help for. But, you know, even as a peer group, I think we should have some way of supporting each other in that perspective.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you about something that is way less important and impactful, but still interesting. You had mentioned, and we're going to talk about Bronzio and Chile Office in a minute here, but you mentioned you're kind of enjoying finding like this very different way of running a company right now, which is as lean as possible. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think man, I think the future, we're going to just see more companies get, I mean, it's already happening, right? Like, as it gets harder to be in e-commerce, which it has, it's gotten materially harder to be in e-commerce the last 3 years, even the last couple of years, you're just going to have to be more efficiently minded and operationally savvy. And even in past research I've done, I've mentioned this a bunch on the podcast, but oftentimes the companies that are the most profitable aren't the ones that have the best return on ad spend or the highest margins, although those definitely contribute. But one of the strongest correlations tends to be who has the least overhead and who can run really efficiently. Anyway, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Like, that seems to be something you're excited about and, you know, really leaning into. So yeah, tell more, please.
Yeah, thanks, man. I mean, it's nothing that interesting. It's just something you learn by doing, right? So it's kind of like one of those situations where, you know, COVID was, you know, when you look at COVID for every person in e-commerce, COVID was like a big, big bumper bonus we never expected. It happened. It turned out to be a great 2 to 3 years. And, you know, and of course, markets normalized, I think, last year because we expected a recession. But this year, especially, it's extremely hard, right? I mean, to give an example, for some of our websites, our CPA, like when I look at a CPA, like let's take Google Ads, right? Google Ads, my CPA for Google Ads, which is basically my Black Friday for some of our niches, was $70, right? From January of 2024 to July, as we close out July, the CPA has gone from $70 Canadian to $143 Canadian.
Wow. So, in 6 months, it doubled. That's insane.
It's 6 months. So my question is, you know, if I'm seeing this in my ad accounts, I mean, no matter like what sort of D2C Twitter you're on, you know, somebody's got to admit at the end of the day that, you know, your CACs are rising, right? CACs are rising, and CACs are rising extremely aggressively. Remember, we are giving our money blindly to a public company. And this public company, of course, satisfies the, guess who? The investors. And they're driven by growth. So, I mean, if you end up giving money to a public company, they're driven with their own agenda, which is basically growth. And for us, we are driven by our own agenda, which means, you know, cheap CAC. And at the end of the day, once these black box algorithms have come into place, which is, i.e., give me your money and I'll go spend it for you at the most operational cost possible, I think things are going to change for sure, right? Now, coming to what lean, you know, what is the lean operation, lean manufacturing? In my case, I'm not a manufacturer, so it becomes lean trading, basically, right? So at the end of the day, most e-commerce players are merchants, right? And our job is to move stuff from China or India or wherever we find it the cheapest and then moving it to the States or around the globe, wherever we find it most operational, right? We went from, I think we literally cut our team by half, first and foremost, right? So imagine like one fine day going and saying, look, the glory days are over, right? 2024 is, tax are rising. Like the same thing, the market reality I'm giving you is the market reality we had to give to our team and said, look, all of this is out of the door. We need to let 50% of the people go. And this is what's going to happen. Everybody got the 2 month bonus. Hopefully, best of luck. Recommendation letters. This is the door. Sorry, we can't really be handhold you till the end of the day. We are going to go through, you know, when this podcast comes out, we would have further reduced our headcount by another 25%. Right? So imagine like year over year, if you've reduced your headcount by 75%. The second thing we did is, we went to all our SaaS vendors and we said, look, really appreciate working with you. We worked with you for 4 years. We got competitive SaaS, like whoever their closest competitor was, say for Zendesk, it was Gorgeous or whoever it was more like saying, look, we are in the market. We are open to any deal whatsoever. These are our basic list of needs. Come in with the lowest price, come with a blind bid, right? So when you go and, you know, most SaaS companies should offer this option. Right, you're the client. They should be able to put a blind bid to you to win your business. Right, we are of course not at the scale of say Ridge Wallet or any one of those guys, but anybody should be able to come in to put a blind bid for your business. Right, so it's one of those in e-commerce you have comparison shopping engines. So in SaaS products also you need some sort of a comparison shopping engine which basically fulfills your needs and should be able to give you the lowest price possible. So we're able to cut a SaaS cost by about 40%. Right, in three ways. Number one, signing long-term deals, 24 months, locked pricing. Number two, price shopping. And number three, of course, it's one of those things which is you tell them the story of honestly what you're going through, right? If our revenue is falling about by 50% year over year and all our employees are being shown the door, then, you know, you need to work with us a bit or else, you know, neither you are going to survive nor am I going to survive in the next 365 days. So it's an interesting conversation to have. And a lot of these SaaS vendors are very supportive of it. Just like, let me be upfront. Some want to play hardball. And that's when you say, do they fit your values? Probably not. See you guys later. It's only happened with one vendor. But I would say 9 out of 10 vendors understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. So revenue too was down really meaningfully over the last year, 50% or so it sounds like based on what you said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How did your psyche and your morale do with a hit like that to revenue? Because I mean, I think I it would be so hard not to let that impact. For me, I know, like, you know, I would be, it's very difficult as entrepreneurs to disassociate our business success with how we're feeling day to day. Like, it's just hardwired into us. How did that affect you kind of mentally, personally, and how are you able to kind of mitigate some of that?
Yeah, I mean, I can take it that process. I mean, this is a good time to bring up Brandio, right? It's like, so with Brandio, which is a business I built over the last 10 years, it was basically a divorce, right? I'm happy to talk about this because it's an open secret. We let Brandio go for parts. It was literally a business that I built for 10 years. And at the end of the day, it sold for not even a 1x net multiple. It was lower than a 1x multiple. And the story behind it was this. My CEO came to me and he literally said, he says, look, I see you sitting behind a desk. I see you sitting behind trying to move the needle day in and day out, right? You used to work 4 to 6 hours. You're a happy-go-lucky guy. You can read, you know, you can belt out strategies. Let's say that's too much of a complicated. You look at like looking around corners. You're able to belt things out when nobody else has thought about it, right? But he says, lately I see you, and all you're doing is working 8 to 10 hours like a mule, not really excited about life. All you're excited about is how to move revenue, and you're so obsessed with moving the revenue and moving the needle that you're getting angry and upset. Be like, I see it when we have calls. So it's an interesting eye-opening experience where you look at it and he's like, you need to, it's like a breakup. You need to divorce this thing. Your life isn't your business. Your purpose in life isn't necessarily the business that you run. And if you see something happening like this, yeah, you need to let it go. You need to say goodbye to it. You need to put it to bed and that's it. And that's where we ended up. And, you know, for the current businesses also, like, I'm excited about a couple, but, you know, like a lot of entrepreneurs out there, you know, last 10 years, how many holidays have I had? I don't remember. Have I gone scuba diving in the last 3 years? No, I haven't. I mean, I've forgotten how to have fun. And I started my business to have fun and freedom. I've forgotten the currency of why I started my business. So I've lost my purpose and my path.
Yeah. I love that so much. Yeah, your life isn't your business. It's a part of it, but it doesn't define it. When you got to that decision to sell Bronzio, and Bronzio, of course, is your watch company for those. I mentioned it at the very top of the episode for folks, but just as a reminder, was that a extremely difficult decision to make? Because I imagine there's this kind of, you know, the sunk cost fallacy, right? Like, and this happens with everyone, right? Like, you know, hey, like you said, you spent 10 years doing this and not that you didn't make money along the way, but you have this asset and the desire and the drive to try to like pull it back and try to, you know, improve it and get it back to the point where it's healthier is so overwhelming and so strong. But then I imagine on the backside, once you made the decision, you sold it and you were kind of free, did you feel like you'd made the right decision? I guess I'm just wondering, yeah, how did that process go before making the decision, the emotions there, and then how you felt after everything was said and done and you had the freedom, even though potentially you'd had to let go of this thing that you'd worked for 10 years on?
Well, you know what? It's a roller coaster. So I can tell you a couple of things that have happened. Number one, I jumped right into the next business, which is Truly Office. So I kept my, remember that pillar I talked about, the Jenga tower of keeping busy? That ain't going away, man. That ain't going away. Right? So the Jenga tower stays intact. Got to keep myself busy somehow. The second thing was, I haven't had time to grieve. Like, I'll be honest, it's like a breakup. It's like an emotional breakup that you would have with your partner, your wife, your girlfriend, or whatever. I have not had time to grieve it. And I know when I stop to think about it, I will grieve it. So in the logical part of me understands what I did, why I did it, and what exactly it is. And that's what most business owners would be like. You need to treat your business like this as a detachment, and you're not attached to the business, right? But from my perspective, this business got me out of like you know, something that was almost close to poverty, right? So for me, it was a means of a livelihood. So, you know, when I talk to you about this, these are the feelings I have, which is, you know, that's how I feel about it. It'll take time. Maybe I need to, you know, do an Andrew, take a few months off, you know, go, you know, try and go for a liveaboard and disconnect from the internet, right? I think the internet for me is basically, as soon as I go online, it's just the end of the world for me.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick sidebar. I want to introduce you to James from lilandmill.com, where they sell stroller accessories and baby gear. James, great guy. I've played hoops with him a number of times at ECF Lives. He's a beast out there. And here's what he has had to say about his experience with e-commerce fuel, our private community for 7- and 8-figure store owners.
I've been a member ever since 2015. It's one of the number one things, if not the number one thing, that kind of helped us grow our business to 7 figures and beyond, and managed to sell it in 2021. And now, since then, I found a business partner through there for my next e-commerce business. And so, you know, the knowledge and the people there, it's, you know, invaluable. So, you know, the cost is nominal, really, at the end of the day, for kind of the value you get out of it and the community. And kind of at the end of the day, at least you have someone else to commiserate with. Things aren't going so well. You know, it really does help out a lot. Even now, even though I consider myself an expert in some fields and people pay me to consult with them, I'm still going there for answers every day, or, you know, at least on a regular basis, and looking through things and learning new things constantly, even in any level of the game. And, you know, there's people in all stratas and kind of all niches there, from selling chickens online to beauty products to large, you know, 9-figure businesses, you know. So it's something there for everyone, basically. So
after hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show.
Yeah, I hear you. One thing, I did an episode on this a while back, kind of doing a gap year with the family and working about 20-25%. And in the very early phases of it, you mentioned that. One thing I have found too, though, is it is harder to disconnect than I thought, because I'm either an all on person or like an all off person, and kind of being in the middle when you kind of are able to see things, but you're delegating things, but maybe you're not as involved as you'd like to be, or you're not able to put like your stamp on things like you like. It's just challenging. Or if things come up or problems come up, not being able to get them out of your mind. Anyway, it's hard to be half engaged or even a quarter engaged, I think. And I'm still struggling with how to do that and learning how to do that to your point. So I think in a perfect world, you could just, you know, turn off the business for a year and then come back. But I think usually if you do that, you come back to oftentimes something that's not that's not great, and it does not put out the best plan.
It's a bit scary when you think about it, right? It's like, number one, is the vision and the mission going to match up to what you had, or it's taken somebody else's? Like, everybody has their own like little dream of how to build a sandcastle, right? Your vision of a sandcastle might be very different with 4 turrets or something. Whereas, you know, when you come back, it might be, like a mosque or something else. Like, it might be look like the Taj Mahal when you get in. You're like, well, I didn't plan for this, but we'll see what happens, right? Somebody told me this very nicely the other day. He says, in the word CEO, the E is for the execution. And I was like, oh, that's a good one. I got to use it at some point in time.
I like that. Well, talk a little bit about what you're doing now. You've got a very ambitious company, Truly Office. Microsoft, I like how you just went for like the largest competitor in the largest market in the world. You're like, listen, everyone's got an Office product. Let's go after them. And so I understand, I think, It's a suite of tools very similar to Microsoft Office, you know, word processor, Excel spreadsheets, things like that. But buy once, it's forever licensed kind of thing. Talk a little bit about, why you picked that market. And that, I mean, that's just going straight after Goliath, man. Respect for it. It's ambitious. What made you think about doing that? What was the thought process there?
I got scared of trying to go after the low hanging fruit and trying to go after niches, you know, that you can scale in and, you know, you can conquer a niche. I said, may as well just go broad, go after total audience market size. Well, in all honesty, there was three things that propelled the decision. Number one was this isn't true today as it was true last year, right? Microsoft basically said they're going to stop making lifetime licenses. And they said they're moving everybody to subscription. So guess what? That thought comes to your head and you're like, wait a second. And then I went to Google and I looked at the search terms that are trending for Office lifetime, Office versus Office subscription. Office subscription, of course, you'll see a continuous growth. But Office lifetime has a big chunk and still is a market leader in terms of all searches that when people are searching for things. And I said, if they're going to do away with making a lifetime product, what's going to happen to all these searches? Well, guess what? Enter the knight in shining armor, me. And then, well, I'll, you know, and so that's the first thing. Let me even preface by saying this. I have no experience in making an Office suite product. Like, I don't know what the heck, where to start from, what to do, and where exactly to start from. So it's basically me getting on a phone, calling people who had expired licenses for the word processing tool, the Excel processing tool, or the PowerPoint processing tool. So they've got GLPs, general purpose licenses, right? So I'm basically calling them up and saying, can I buy this off of you? Can I buy this off of you? Can I buy the rights of this off of you? So I have full control of it. And then in the back end, you basically have, you're like, we did. So this whole Office suite is made by a 10% dev team, right? Not even, I would say like 8 people. The UX and UI is basically like taken from, not from Microsoft. I just want to say that clearly. It's taken from different facets of different open licenses and then combined together. It's a Frankenstein version of Microsoft Office. It does exactly what Microsoft Office does. It solves your word processor problems. It integrates with Microsoft Office. It like there's no difference between the two. So then my thought process was, why do you have to pay $150 what Microsoft charges versus $44.99 what we charge? It should be so, like, technology has taken you so far that you should be able to, you know, what's that Moore's law where we say, you know, if your technology is involved to a certain extent where, you know, product should be cheaper in the long run, right? You've got scalability, so of course costs should come down. But instead, on Microsoft's side, they keep raising the prices. So we said, okay, we're going to go the other way, right? I mean, so I made some mistakes. Let's be clear. Not everything's a home run. Number one, deep discounting. Don't ever do it. I've heard that. Everybody has that idea. As an e-commerce guy, all my friends around in ECF tell me not to do it. But guess what? First guy who did it, this guy, right? So probably the worst idea ever. Second is probably you have to understand where the product fits. I tried to do Facebook ads for this product. I tried to do influencers for this product. We spent probably about about $50,000-$60,000 in tests that we did actually need, including landing pages. It's all bullshit. The product page that actually ended up working out for us at the end of the day was a very simple landing page, which is a comparison of all versions of Office, and that was it. That one was the best, right?
Sorry, Ronnie, say that one more time. What was the landing page formula that worked out well for you?
It was a comparison landing page. It was basically comparing three different versions of Office in one place. So people had the choice. But let me take it one step further. This product, in terms of profitability, sure, Google's going to work for you. And it needs education, right? So it needs to catch on slowly but surely. But you also need profit. I mean, we came together and put this Office suite together for, I would say, less than $500,000, which is a feat in itself, because we wanted to deploy something quick, lean, and we did it within 8 months, right? Compared to like 3 years that Microsoft takes to develop its next version of Office, which is going to release this year, by the way, which I forgot to mention. And so we found a way to deploy this on Amazon. And believe it or not, on Amazon, since day one, we are profitable. So we don't make much money on Amazon. It's between $5,000 and $10,000 a month. But the appetite for this product on Amazon far outweighs it in the D2C space.
Interesting. when you, to go back just a little bit, you said earlier you were buying licenses from people, and I, you know, you were calling people up and asking about to buy licenses. And I was just assuming you were calling people who had licenses to kind of do market research or see if they wanted to buy your product. But were you, what did you mean by that when you said you were buying licenses? I kind of lost, what license were you buying and why were you trying to acquire them?
So everybody has open source licenses, right? So people have open source licenses. So it's not necessarily called Word, it's called word processor. So people in the 80s and 90s, before Microsoft came out with Word, had their own word processing licenses. Before Microsoft patented the whole architecture of, you know, architecture of Microsoft Word, there were these pre-existing licenses. So OpenOffice is a great example of this, right? OpenOffice and Apache Office, they just, it's a bunch of developers who come together and they can build on top of it, right? So we basically are paying a developer or a bunch of developers who basically come together in an open source community to develop a particular license. And we said, can we have users' rights for this? And this is what we'll pay you for the users' rights to it.
Interesting. And so you've got it, you've built it up. The team, did you have to go out and build the team, the dev team, or were the programmers already on your staff from your previous business from Bronzio?
We had one or two developers. We hired about four more, and we had a couple of UI UX people on top. So, I mean, all in all, even the dev team, like, so include the, so let's put it this way. If I were to look at the licensing rights, plus the dev rights, plus everything, right now we've narrowed it down to only one dev. We only have one dev left. That's it. So till we work on a new version, and he said he'll work on the background, the new version, that's fine. But everything all included was under $500,000. When I say, like, it's like to deploy an Office suite, which, like I said, it's an interesting feat, but it's because I expected it to be a lot more expensive. But somehow the Indian in me knew how to get a deal out of the situation. So we figured it out.
And is where are all your developers? Are they Thailand? Are they India? The stateside? Where are they?
No, Brazil, Croatia, and Serbia.
And how did you find, because are you a programmer yourself?
No. I'm probably, yeah, you don't want me there. I'm a bad Indian that way.
So how did you find, manage, like, did you hire a lead that went out and hired the developers? How did Correct. You do all that? Okay. Where did you find that lead?
Yeah. So it was a word of mouth. It was a previous CTO. So we had a lead developer in Serbia. So they knew people who knew people, and we were like, hey, and devs are always excited, right? So devs are kind of like an exciting bunch of people. It's like a Rubik's Cube. You give them a Rubik's Cube to solve, and they're the most excited people in their life. So you pose to them new problems. There's two ways they will do it. Number one is they'll find ways to overcomplicate things just so it satisfies their curiosity. Or the other way is you throw enough shit at them that is so complicated that it satisfies their curiosity by default. And they're like, okay, we'll find something to work on together and figure out a way to do it. So that's how it actually worked out in the grand scheme of things. I mean, you know, just to put a pin on it, the part that I forgot to mention is in November 2023, Microsoft decided to release Office 2024 lifetime versions, which is going to retail for $199. So an Office version for $44.99, which does exact and, you know, behaves the same way as a $199 product does and works on two computers and five computers, sounds a lot more economical, I would say, than paying $200.
It seems like the biggest thing, the hurdle you'd have to get across or overcome with people is you're buying Microsoft, you know it works, you know the compatibility. Really, one of the biggest things you're spending with Microsoft is the network effect, right? Like if I use an Excel doc and I send it to someone else, you know, almost everyone has Word or Excel. And so it's guaranteed to work properly. But you're saying with your product, with Truly Office, you can save in a DocX format. You can save in an Excel format. And can it be opened by Word and Excel?
Correct.
People who have Office and everything is just completely CSVs, cross-compatible?
Yeah, it's cross-compatible. So when we made we made it in mind with that factor, which was basically like, hey, we want to use this product. So it's cross-functional across everything. The thing we don't have yet and which we're working on next is mobile and tablet apps, which is a whole different can of worms. So the idea was to start this product, right, which has its own ecosystem. So, you know, it was putting your privacy first. You know, your data belongs to you, it belongs on your computer, so you just have it. So something like that happened. I mean, I'm kicking myself for not taking much more advantage of this. Is the Microsoft CrowdStrike thing that happened last Friday, right? Which is, you know, which was basically all of Microsoft systems went down. People around the world got a half day. Thank you, Microsoft and CrowdStrike. But, you know, well, I mean, it was great. But, you know, I should have taken more advantage of that situation of ringing the alarm bells, which is basically like how easy it is for all your systems to go offline one fine day. And especially all 365 systems were affected. Nobody had perpetual office loaded on the computer so that even if you wanted to complete a Word doc that was due at the end of the day, you could have done it. So the way I look at it is we don't want to replace Microsoft. We're a complement to Microsoft at the end of the day, right? So this for $40 isn't going to break your bank, you know? So you already have a 365 licensing subscription. You can use this as a complement. And a lot of our customers do that, by the way.
But Ronnie, how are you dealing with missing like supply chain and inventory and having physical products? Because I know that was a real love of yours in the last business, you know, having that physical, those physical items that you shipped around. So how are you dealing with that part?
Oh, yeah. Don't you worry about it. This morning I got, you know, somebody came, one of our Amazon guys came to me and they said, you know, the Amazon manager came to me and he says, we need to figure out a way to print and ship 250 of these like pamphlets that need to go to Amazon this morning. And I have to deliver it within 7 business days. So, and then I called up a printer and basically a printer at the end of the day, the last guy quit. So that's why we're talking about print for less in Montana, which is basically me trying to like source code. Exactly. So me trying to go and source quotations from different people to figure out what is the lowest price that I can get. And then how quickly can we ship out to Amazon? Which is fantastic. So
you get to scratch the itch still. It's still there a little bit.
It's still there, man. You need to do this. This is life, you know. If things, you know, if any business will throw curveballs at you, and I'm enjoying it. It's not that. Look, this is my goal is to scale this business. Hopefully, we can do about, you know, $300 to $500,000 in the next 2-3 years. I'd be more than happy. The part that scares me a little bit is that I learned from my mistakes of my last business, right? So,
I got one last thing I'd love to ask you about, and that's the Google penalty side of things. So you had mentioned you're recovering from 2 or 3 Google penalty hits, which took your traffic really, I mean, cut it almost, you know, down by 80% from like 2 million to 400K per month. And I'm not sure if this is on Brandzio or if this is on the
portfolio sites. Not Trulioffice. Yeah. So I can take you through that. You know, third time Google got lucky. Let's put it this way. So the first update rolled around in December, right? That one we survived and we had a little bit like a 10% drop. And then in February, we did a site migration and we said, okay, we'll, you know, with site migrations. So we did a site migration during a Google update unbeknownst to us. Fair enough. It happens. No issues. You'll lose another 10%, but chances are, you will recover from it in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then in March, we got manually penalized. So what that means is somebody launched a negative SEO attack on our websites. So some person came in and deployed hundreds, if not thousands, of Ukrainian and Russian backlink websites. And all of a sudden, you know, that, and third action is the manual action. So when Google gives you a manual action penalty, it's almost like, you know, it's the death knell. But luckily, we did not go down to zero. So we're still at 400K. There are things that we're doing to try and move the needle. So I'm finding out something very, very interesting, right? About whole Google's whole ecosystem. Since March, Google, and this is tactical for people who, I hope people take this back because it's important. The number one thing is Google has hard-coded into the algorithm a list of what they call forbidden keywords. So if you look at the number of searches and multiply by what Google determines to be the basic CPC value of that search term. So for example, if I'm getting 1,000 searches for the mother brand Brandzio and the CPC for Brandzio is $2, right? So that's about a, you know, $2,000 keyword. You will, if you try and rank for those forbidden keywords, what's going to start happening is that Google is going to start penalizing you because they're saying you are not a watch site. So if I'm running Trulioffice and I'm trying to rank for Brandzio, Google is saying, you're not a watch site. What the heck are you doing trying to rank for those terms? Here's a little, you know, little slap on your wrist. So you can't. So that's something that we tested out. We're seeing some recovery, interestingly, right? Number one, because what a lot of, so if you're a news site trying to do that, right? It's a whole different ballgame. If you're a community trying to do that, whole different ballgame. But if you're an e-commerce site trying to go out of your niche and trying to trying to get into something else you shouldn't be getting into, you're gonna get slapped for it. So what Google is saying is stay in your own lane. Don't try and like be like an Amazon or something.
Were you trying to rank your other site for Brandseo, the Truly Office site?
No. I was trying to rank Microsoft Office on Microsoft Office comparison for Truly Office.
I see. Yeah. Okay, got it. Yeah. And so that is where. So that you got the hit there, and then you also said like a negative SEO attack. Did you have other people who were targeting you with kind of an aggressive? What were they doing specifically? And were you able to fight it at all? Like to contest it with Google?
You can't. The thing is, you can give once you get hit by a manual penalty. I mean, we got hit back in March, and it's July, and we still haven't heard back from anyone. So what happens in this case is any of your competitors can go and buy out 200,000-300,000 spammy sites, and they just one fine day they just start linking back to you. So these are like black hat links, people who basically pop the PBNs, like private blogging networks from back in the day, and they basically come, go and connect to your site. And one, and if you're not like aggressive enough on a weekly basis to go through and disavow them, which we did not because we were going through a site migration, you'll get hit. And this is what happened to us. I mean, at the end of the day, this is not how you, me, and most of these, you know, most of the guys you and me know would do business. But it's a tactic. It's, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, and this is the tactic they decide to employ. That's their choice. We are not here to judge or anything with them. I mean, if it works for them, good enough, you know. What comes easy goes easy.
If you go out and disavow all of those backlinks after the fact, after you kind of start to see the ranking suffer, given I'm guessing that is more of an algorithmic penalty versus a manual one, can you get your rankings back by disavowing all the sketchy links?
We disavowed them, but the thing is, once you get hit by a manual penalty by Google, it's basically like you are basically at Google's mercy. That's the way it works, right? Somebody has to manually go in and take that little tag off of you saying "naughty child."
Yeah, I think maybe one last kind of closing question here. How are you thinking about marketing, kind of going forward? I feel like it's so interesting to think about marketing, how it's changed over the last decade in e-commerce, and I feel like we're in a world where, you know, search is less valuable, even for those people that it still powers a meaningful part of their business. It's getting harder and harder. Like you mentioned, you know, throughout the episode, CPCs are going through the roof. Amazon is increasingly difficult. I feel like we're coming into this new world of, you're going to have to adjust and pivot in pretty meaningful ways to be able to keep getting attention. How are you thinking about that? Like, obviously you've got a portfolio of businesses. You have some e-commerce businesses, you have the software business, of course. So do you have any thoughts on like ways that you're thinking about shifting your marketing tactics versus how you've done it for the last 5+ years?
Yeah, I think the business itself needs an overhaul, right? The way we think about business and the way what people always talk about is the way we are actually vying for attention. But I would reverse engineer by saying, how are we actually charging our customers, right? So for example, I always ask this question of, I mean, I know some e-com merchants have done this and they've done it very successfully, is, you know, with having pay what you want pricing, which is an interesting one for me, to be honest. You know, there's a suggested pricing, which is a bare minimum, and anything over that you want to pay, you're welcome to pay it, right? Based on the service or whatever. Another thing that I've thought about the software business is, you know, when you're paying, can you pay by user? Like, just come download it, take what you want. Can you pay just by user? Like one user, you know, if it's $44, you download for one user, it's $22, right? Or $20, whatever you want. Interesting way to look at it. Brian Yang, who's in ECF, he referred a really good book my way. And I'm sorry, I don't have it. Yeah. So do you mind if I just pull it up? It's an interesting book. I don't know. I know he was on your podcast. I don't know if he actually mentioned this book, but it's highly, highly, highly addictive. It's called Play Bigger. And it's about how you build a category and you decide to dominate your category. And I've literally just been listening to it nonstop. And it's just like, it's got me roped around in every such ways. Because what this book talks about is something, the basics are all there. Like the basics of marketing and advertising is, let's split it into two. Number one, we got addicted to cheap CPCs, which is a cheap drug, right? So whenever we think about starting a business, we're like, okay, let's go look for the cheapest drug possible, which is, you know, advertising, and let's boost our profits, right? We're not thinking about it from a strategic perspective of saying, hey, is there a way to look at how to do a blitz? Are we actually, when we think about creating a category, which is like Truly Office or something, which is like a Microsoft competitor, how are we thinking about creating that category? I didn't think about all this stuff. I just went in and said, yeah, well, there's $32 billion on the books, and I want a piece of pie, and I want a piece of that pie. That was exactly the way I thought. I'm sorry, like, this is, it's a true story, right? Like, I wish I had a tech bro answer to this, but I don't. It was like, the 32 billion reasons why I shouldn't do this. But when you think about the category, you know, creating a category and how exactly you want to dominate it with the blitz, with this Microsoft CrowdStrike instances and everything else, I feel like, you know, there's a lot more thought process that goes into it, which is, you know, category creation.
Yeah. No, super interesting. Ronnie, always so fun having you on. You're just, man, like I mentioned at the top, your energy, kind of your intellect, like your upbeatness, and just also your candor. I mean, like, thank you so much you shared a lot of stuff that is not necessarily easy to share in terms of like the health journey, in terms of struggles with the business. And I appreciate that deeply. I know people listening oftentimes get the most out of those episodes because all of us at some point or another, often on an ongoing basis, are wrestling with stuff, and we're not always open and candid about it. So anyway, just thank you for all that. And thanks for everything done for ECF, man. You are such a pleasure to have in our community and such an asset and friend. And just, it's wonderful to have you in the community and on the show, man. So looking forward to hanging out this fall. And
yeah,
it's going to be fun. So
thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah. And like you talked, of course, about Truly Office, but give people, you know, you kind of gave it the soft description cell, but give it a little bit more of a round description for people. If, you know, maybe they missed it in the middle. I don't know. Maybe the dog was needing attention. Maybe they just were zoned out or something, but trulyoffice.com. Who should go check that out?
Yeah. I really appreciate it. Never pay for a subscription again. That's the tagline. And there's 32. Yes. I am only so much more in terms of dollars to catching up to that $32 billion goal, guys.
$32 billion. You're like, yo, Balmer and Gates, move over.
That's it.
Yeah, they're not running it anymore.
Bro, listen, I fit the criteria. I'm Indian. I'm, you know, it's like I'm fit to run that company and just need to catch up to the balance sheet. That's it. Winning.
I can see the chart on in your bedroom or in your office, right? Like, you've got zero and you've got 32 billion, and every day, you know, you compare your sales and you kind of fill in a little bit of the chart. that's the motivation.
It's like the mosaic, right? The mosaic of faces, and you just take one little one out, and there's a little bill there, little bill there.
I love it. But yeah, Truly Office, that's Truly office.com. If you're getting sick of PIN, you know, boosting the Microsoft share price unnecessarily every month, go check them out, and great software. So Ronnie, thank you. Looking forward to seeing you in September. And yeah, man, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on.
Appreciate it, Andrew. Thanks.
That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you to OneClick Upsell, who offers incredible upsell software to get more from every single customer and increase your average order value on your site. To make more money from the customers you already have, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you own a 7 or 8 figure store, you really should be a part of our private community and forums here at Ecommerce Fuel, where you can connect with over 1,200 store owners just like you. We're so confident it'll be a game changer that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. If you don't see 10x your membership value in the first year, we'll refund you 100% of your membership fees plus toss in an extra $1,000 for the hassle. So you can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and look forward to seeing you again next Friday.